to remember and accept.
So, good morning, everyone. Good to see you here. And good morning to the people on the Cloud Zendo and, of course, Wall Street. Just have a quick peek at, look at all those little squares. Good to see you. So, first of all, how's the sound? I see thumbs. Good. Okay. Hope that's all right. Just put that a little bit closer. Okay. Well, I think as most people know, we're in the middle of a month-long study of a particular chapter or text of Dogen's kind of collected works known as the Shobogenzo, composed in Japan in the 13th century. And this title of this particular chapter that we're looking at is in Japanese is Gyoji, continuous practice is the translation that we're using. And we have already heard a number of very wonderful talks from Kate and Claire on this. And if you're interested in reading the translation, it's posted on the Mountain Rain website under events, and then Dogen's Continuous Practice month-long intensive, and then there's a place you can download it. So as has been mentioned, I think both by Kate and by Claire, Dogen is really famous for his very intricate and inventive writing style, and also for his interpretive use of koans, those traditional stories coming from the Zen tradition. And basically, just a playful use of language. And this particular fascicle or chapter in the Shobogenzo is no exception. But it's also unique. Most of Dogen's writings deal with various teachings in the Mahayana tradition and with the views, those views that come from the Mahayana tradition. And he discusses them with great philosophical subtlety. Some of that kind of writing is also in Gyoji or continuous practice, especially at the beginning and a little bit at the end. But most of the text gives short descriptions of the continuous practice of 35 famous practitioners in the Zen lineage, starting with Shakyamuni Buddha. And then his famous disciple, Mahakashapa, and then it continues on, going through many noted Chan or Zen teachers and leaders, and all through China, ending with his own, eventually with his own teacher, Rujing, when Dogen went to China to study. So as a result, it's really the longest chapter, longest piece of writing in this collected works, the Shobogenzo. And it reads a little bit kind of like a who's who of the Zen world in China particularly. It's kind of interesting. But this chapter, you know, it's not about listing names. It's about stories. Stories that hold both histories and lore, particularly of noted past teachers and how they engaged in this idea of continuous practice. Now, Dogen could have said, do this, do this, and this. And here's the reasons why. Buddhist texts are full of lists. The three this, the four that, the seven this, on it goes. They're full of lists of qualities that we are to cultivate and practices we can engage in. But if Dogen had just written a to-do list, this chapter would have been much shorter, of course, and it would have been pretty dry. He knew the power of story. He knew that stories can help individuals deepen their understanding and help them overcome personal barriers to practice and to change. He knew that stories can be contagious. One practitioner tells another, who tells another, and in this way, the stories spread. They've spread rapidly, and the benefits are shared by many. Some of the stories that he tells about our ancestors might strike us as kind of unbelievable. But these stories tell us something beyond the historical fact. These stories tell us about the human condition and the universal longing to be whole and to be free. Continuous practice. So what is continuous practice, or in Japanese, gyoji? Well, here are the characters, the Chinese characters. Let me just hold that up for people to see. There's two characters, gyo, g at the bottom. G, I'll say this one first, means something that is sustained, unremitting, constant. And gyo, it's a little bit stylized. Gyo means to undertake, conduct, do, carry out, practice, accomplish, a path. It has a lot of meanings in Chinese. Gyoji, continuous practice. In our form of Zen, this particular form of Zen, I feel gyoji, or this continuous practice, really lies at the very heart of our practice. Western culture is so goal-oriented, right? For many of the things that we do in life, there's a goal that we aim for. The graduation, the certificate, the championship, the ability to play that particular challenging song on the guitar, to reach our ideal weight, to best our opponent at tennis, to be happy even, to be content, to be enlightened. That's the goal. But Dogen suggests a radical view that practice and awakening, the doing and the goal, are not two things. The Mahayana tradition teaches that enlightenment and our delusion are not separate. Now, we can't, or at least I can't in this talk, explore this in really great depth. But let me give you one metaphor, at least, that may kind of open the door a little bit to thinking about this. And this also comes from the Mahayana tradition. Delusions and enlightenment are like waves in the ocean. The waves seem separate, full of motion as they travel across the water and break onto the beach. And yet the wave is just water. Water stirred up by wind. And no matter how much turbulence is caused by the wind deep below, water remains quiet. So we engage in practice not to reach some imaginary state of enlightenment that will keep us completely separate from all the pain and suffering in the world, our delusions, but because it allows us to appreciate the awakening that is already present, our birthright. It allows us to appreciate the fullness of our life. So I think Dogen uses this word, gyoji, to describe the full expression of our life in each moment. And the stories he relates illustrate and inspire the many facets of what that full expression is. So today, I'd like to talk about one facet. I'd like to talk about work as continuous practice. So let's start with the story that Dogen relates about Huineng. Huineng, an illiterate peasant, who became the sixth ancestor, the sixth kind of head of the Zen tradition. Now, he lived in the mid-600s in China, AD. And the story goes that one day he was selling firewood in the marketplace and he heard a monk chanting the Diamond Sutra. And so moved by what he heard, Hui Neng asked the monk where he could study the Buddha way. And the monk told him, oh, well, you should go to a temple on Mount Huangme and learn under the abbot Hongren. So here's now the quote from Dogen's writing on this continuous practice about throwing himself into Hongren's assembly on Mount Huangme. Hui Neng pounded rice day and night for 8 months without sleep or rest. He received the authentic transmission of the robe and bowl at midnight. After being entrusted with the Dharma, he continued to pound rice for 8 years, traveling with a grindstone on his back. Even after he emerged in the world and expounded the Dharma to awakened people, he did not neglect his grinding stone. His continuous practice was rare in the world. In our practice, in the Zen practice, work itself is an essential path for waking up. Indian Buddhist monks, as probably many of you know, were prohibited from working and were supported by the generosity of the lay community. But in Chinese culture, this did not make sense. The common understanding was that everyone should contribute to support of all. And so work has been part of practice. Hui Neng, when he arrived at Hongren's temple, was given a physically demanding job. In those days, rice was not milled or polished like modern rice is today. It was hand-pounded using a mortar and pestle to remove the husk and the bran. I find it interesting that Dogen writes that Hui Neng continued to serve the community in this way even after he became a teacher of the Dharma. Pounding rice. So what does this tell us about the nature of work? About the nature of practice? Now this story reminded me of another famous Zen story from the 13th century Japan. Dogen is the founder of Soto Zen in Japan, and he'd gone to China to study. And he was waiting on his boat. They had arrived in harbor in China, but he had to wait for permission to disembark from the Chinese authorities. And while he was waiting on his boat, he met an old tenzo, an old head cook, who had walked miles to buy some Japanese mushrooms brought over from Japan on Dogen's ship. And so here's the story of the meeting between Dogen and this elderly Chinese monk. This is Dogen writing again. He writes, in the fifth month of the 16th year of the Jading era, which is 1223, I was on a ship at Qingyuan, which is the harbor, waiting to get permission to disembark. While I was talking with the Japanese captain, there was an old monk who arrived. He was about 60 years old. Doesn't seem so old to me anymore, 60. Anyway, he came directly onto the ship and inquired of the Japanese passengers if he could buy some Japanese mushrooms. I invited him to drink tea and asked where he was from. He was the cook of the monastery on Mount Ayuan. He said, I come from Shuang, but I left my home village 40 years ago. This year, I am 61 years old. At the end of the summer retreat last year, however, I was appointed cook at that monastery. Tomorrow is a feast day. but the entire menu does not yet have a single delicacy. I need to cook noodle soup, but I still have no mushrooms. And thus, I have made a special trip here to buy mushrooms to offer it to the monks. Dogen says, I then told the monk, I will treat the Zen master, I will treat you to a meal. And the cook said, it's impossible. If I do not oversee the preparations for tomorrow's meal offering, it will not turn out well. I said, are there no co-workers in the monastery who understand the meals? The cook replied, I took up this position in my later years. It is an old man's pursuit of the way. How could I hand it over to others? I again asked the cook, you are venerable in years. Why don't you sit in meditation to pursue the way or contemplate the words of the ancients? It is troublesome being a cook. All you do is labor. What good is that? The cook laughed and said, my good man from a foreign country, you do not yet understand wholeheartedly the pursuit of the way. The cook got up and said, it's late in the day, I'm in a hurry, so I go back now. It is a conventional for us to see work as merely a means to an end, something that has to be done now in order to do what we really want to do later. But as this story illustrates, continuous practice takes work beyond this rather narrow point of view. Dogen came to see and teach his students that work is continuous practice and indispensable as we take our practice off the cushion and into living and being in the wider world. The old cook demonstrates to us a radical willingness to go beyond our everyday limited small self, the one that is dictated by our likes and dislikes, prejudices, narrow points of view, and fixed ways of seeing and doing things. Dogen, as a young man, he was in his 20s at this point, Dogen, as a young man, was surprised by this demonstration of continuous practice. It was just cooking. Get someone else to do it. You're old. Sit down. Have a meal with me. Let's discuss the Dharma. No. The old cook showed Dogen and shows us that a true and deep approach to spiritual growth includes all aspects of life. Although not written in Dogen's account, I think Dogen probably came to understand, and again thanks to this visitor that he had, that the qualities of Zazen are not just present on the cushion, but reside within the activities of life itself. Opening to continuous practice makes us aware of that truth. Okay, time for another story. And this one again from Gyoji, a little bit later on in the chapter. Mazu of Jiangxi did Zazen for 20 years and received the intimate seal from Nanyue. Thus Mazu, when expounding the Dharma and saving people, did not say anything that may discourage anyone from practicing Zazen. Whenever a new student arrived, he would allow them to intimately receive the mind seal. In other words, took very good care of them, taught them careful meditation practice. But here's the next line. He was always the first one to engage in communal work and was not lax, even when he was old. So in this short story, Dogen brings our attention to another great ancestor, Mazu. In the Koan collections, there are a number of stories about what Mazu said and did to inspire his students. He was quite a remarkable teacher. But it is the last line here that I'd like us to focus on. He was always the first one to engage in communal work and was not lax even when old. I was thinking about this and realizing work as continuous practice brings us together as a community. This is one of the special aspects about this Mountain Rain Zen community. We practice and we work together. Members work on various committees, do Zendo jobs, sit on the council, help beginners, give instructions, organize and run retreats and special events, make food for half-day retreats, clean the Zendo, take care of our media presence, give talks, and support everyone in the Sangha in many, many different ways. This is how together we create Sangha. This is how together we create a place of deep practice. It is possible to go online and just find places that offer a session and retreats you can kind of like parachute into. But at best, I believe that's just half the practice. Struggling together, making mistake after mistake, to show up even when we'd rather kick back and watch something on Netflix, even when we feel lazy. All of that inspires others and inspires our own practice. That's why Venerable Mazu was always the first one to engage in communal practice, in communal work, even when he was old. It was his expression, his teaching of communal, of continuous practice. So, one more story. This one about the great teacher Baijiang. From time to time, he was the attendant to Mazu until Mazu died. Baijiang, who would later become Zen master Daji, did not let a single day pass without working for the assembly or others. He graciously gave us the model, a day of no work is a day of no eating. When Baijiang was old, he labored just like those in their prime. The assembly was concerned about him, but he did not stop working. At last, some students hid the tools from him during work period. Imagine hiding the hoe and broom and things. So they hid his tools. He refused to eat that day, expressing his regret that he could not join the assembly's communal work. This is Baijiang's exemplification of a day of no work is a day of no eating. The wind of the Linji or Rinzai school, which is now widely spread in Song China, as well as the wind of other schools, represents the continuous practice of Baijiang, Baijiang's profound teaching. So from Baijiang onward, work has been understood as an expression of continuous practice. Baijiang showed through his actions that work expresses our life and our dignity. We are born to work. I think we forget that. Sometimes think we're born to have fun. We're born to watch TV. We're born to work. And we are fulfilled when we work with awareness and care. It's not clear if old Baijiang was still teaching, still the abbot, when his monks became concerned about his age. Perhaps somebody else had taken the role of abbot at that point. I don't know. But yet, old and probably frail, Baijong did not let a single day pass without working for the assembly. So, how do you? How do you make work continuous practice rather than a goal to complete? Well, here are a few suggestions, and there are many practices that we can pick up to help us express continuous practice. In Zen monasteries, a work period is timed. When the bell rings or the clapper claps, work stops. Completed or not, tools are put away. Not finished sweeping, stop. Not finished hoeing, that's okay. Next day. Imagine your own situation. Maybe 45 minutes spent on answering endless emails and then stop. The rest wait for the following day. You may already say, can't do that. What can you do? Beginning work, very important. Doing work, very important. Stopping work, very important. And work period in temples is spent in silence. No speaking other than a few functional instructions. And so we could ask ourselves, is there work in my life that can be done in silence, without background music, without talking? And you may find that silence brings a kind of clarity and energy to the task. When we're doing physical work, bring awareness to the hands in the body. Notice the feel of dishes, for example, the soapy water, warmth. I've even done typing, feeling my fingers hit the keys. And then pause in the middle of any job that you're doing. Take a breath or two for a few moments. Look outside the window. Feel the body, noting what emotions are there. What thoughts are present? And my final suggestion would be this. Make your work an offering. Offer it for the benefit of others. Offer it for the benefit of your practice and well-being. Offer it for Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. You don't have to make a big show of it, doing 9 bows, offering incense, and all that stuff. A few words, a deep-hearted expression. Make it an offering. Continuous practice, continuous practice, continuous practice. Thank you all for listening. And I believe I'm giving the next talk on Wednesday on continuous practice, some other aspect of it. Got to get cracking here. Thank you.